This is Jerry Bain podcasting from the Coalition for Networked Information Fall 2012 meeting, and I'm with David Rosenthal, Chief Scientist for the LOCKS program at Stanford University. Thanks for joining us today, David.
Sure.
First of all, I wanted to ask you about preservation as a service. How does it compare to software as a service, which we've been dealing with the last few years? And what are some of the questions that are the same, and what are some new questions that come about with this?
Anything as a service, the economics of it depend fundamentally on two different things. The first one is economics of scale, the one that everybody focuses on. They believe that if you do something at a big enough scale, it saves money. And if you do it at an even bigger scale, it saves even more money, and so on. And that's true. It's not actually an exponential that keeps going up forever and ever. It's an S-curve. There's an appropriate scale to deal with any service. And as you get closer and closer to that, the gains from economics of scale tail off. And then there's the issue of over-provisioning. What these services are depending on is the spikiness of demand for the service. And the idea is that by aggregating a lot of different spiky demands, you end up with an overall demand that's much less spiky. So instead of having to over-provision to cover each of the individual spikes, huge spikes, you over-provision only to cover the aggregate of all the spikes, which is proportionately much smaller. So those are two real benefits. The question ends up being whether those benefits end up with the consumer or whether they end up with the provider of the service. And I haven't been looking at the overall preservation picture. I've been looking at storage primarily. But we can say that at least as far as the storage part of preservation is concerned, it doesn't have the spikiness that, for example, ingest has a spiky thing. Things turn up at different times. Sometimes you need a lot of resources to process them. Other times you don't. And that means that you can get the over-provisioning benefit. But storage just keeps going on.
It's very consistent.
It's very consistent. It grows over time, but it doesn't spike up and down. I mean, right. You don't, at least in the preservation business, you're not typically throwing large amounts of data away and freeing up resources that somebody else could use.
Right.
And as far as the economies of scale are concerned, our analysis that we started doing about a year ago is pretty consistently showing that those benefits are ending up with the providers. We see this with the history of charging for storage services. Amazon introduced S3, it was the first of the large-scale storage services, at a very competitive price. And then they held it pretty flat for many years. And during that time, the cost of the underlying storage went down a lot. So Amazon started out with relatively small margins and ended up with really huge margins.
Right. And are they addressing that at all?
The price has come down. The last couple of months, there's been Google initially introduced a storage service which was way overpriced, and they cut prices to undercut Amazon somewhat. 2 days later, Amazon matched that price cut, and last week, Microsoft matched that price cut. So they're all now at a very consistent price. And this is typically what you see in markets that aren't really competitive, where there's a small number of big players. And in the storage market, it's clear that Amazon is by far the biggest provider of all of them. And what you see is there are a number of competitors, and they basically agree on a price through mechanisms that don't end them up in antitrust court. And they use other means to freeze out competitive providers. Basically, what they do is they're signaling that if you enter this market and try and undercut us significantly, we have a lot of scope for cutting prices on you.
Right.
And because we have a much bigger market share than you do, we're going to have lower costs, and so you're going to lose.
Yeah.
And we saw this in the airline industry. It was as part of the consolidation. We ended up with airlines which cut prices occasionally, and then they basically all either match that price cut or they back it out. And there's this mechanism for signaling in the market which allows them to fix prices without actually getting sued for antitrust. So the analysis that we've done shows that the benefits of the economies of scale have pretty much ended up with the providers.
Yeah. Are there any other financial or logistical challenges that institutions should be looking at for preservation in the cloud?
Yeah. The other big one is vendor lock-in. Everybody who's talking about cloud services ends up with a nod of the head to vendor lock-in, and they say, well, what if the provider goes away? And realistically, Amazon's not going away, so that's not the problem. The problem is that the other thing that vendor lock-in allows them to do is to improve their margins. They're going to charge you more because they know that moving away to some less expensive competitor isn't a very expensive business. And so what that means is two things. One of them is you're paying them a lot more than you should, and the second one is you need to have some competitor that's a lot cheaper than the one you're currently buying from in order to justify the cost of moving to them. And as we see in the market right now, there isn't a competitor that's a lot cheaper than them because the three big providers are all exactly matching each other's prices.
So they win either way, huh?
Yeah. And what we're seeing here really is there's a confusion in the discussion between cloud as a technology and cloud as a commercial business. The technology is actually available to anyone. There are open source implementations of the whole stack platform, OpenStack and so on. You can do this for yourself if you can aggregate enough demand to capture the economies of scale. But people don't want to do it themselves. They want to buy it from somebody who's already doing it because it's less hassle.
Right.
And the result of not wanting to deal with the hassle is that you're overpaying for the services from these commercial providers.
So there haven't been any consortiums created?
You see this. With DPN, for example, it's not quite the same thing, but it's a way of aggregating demand for long-term storage and satisfying it internally from the community rather than buying it in from commercial suppliers. And the real challenge in doing this is not implementing the technology. It's off-the-shelf technology. People know how to do this. The challenge is organizing the economic structures around that so that you're able to capture the economies of scale and the over-provisioning thing, and more particularly for storage, that you're able to keep the price going down to match the underlying costs so that you're not in the situation that you are with Amazon, where you buy into the service at a price point which is making Amazon X dollars, and then over time the costs underneath go down so that they're making 2X and 3X dollars because they haven't lowered the price on you. And I think this is particularly a risk. So Amazon introduced 4 months ago now, I think, this new service called Glacier. And Glacier is sort of an admission that the business model for S3 is not appropriate for long-term storage, because what they did was they introduced something which is at least five times cheaper, which is specifically about long-term storage. And in order to not cannibalize their original market, they had to give it features which make it not convenient to use for short-term storage.
Of course.
Right. But what this shows is that there's a substantial margin, because they can afford to provide essentially the same service at five times cheaper. But the price point that they set was 1 cent a gigabyte a month. And this is sort of like people pricing stuff at so many dollars and 99 cents.
Right.
Because it's a really attractive price point. It makes a great headline, all that kind of stuff. And what that means is they're not going to reduce that. The extra business they'd get by going down to, I don't know, 95.95 cents a dollar, a gigabyte a month, is not worth it.
Right.
So it's going to stay at 1 cent a gigabyte a month for a long time.
Yeah.
And now let's suppose that Amazon has priced this at break-even now, and they stay for 5 years. And 5 years at the industry projected rate of cost reduction means that the 5 years out, they're going to be making enormous amounts of money on this service.
Right, right.
And what this kind of illustrates is that institutions in universities and so on, which typically run on an annual budgeting cycle, mm-hmm. are negotiating with providers who have a much longer term investment horizon. And so the university is looking and saying, well, what's it going to cost me this year? And next year I'll take another decision. And the provider is saying, we're going to buy these disks now, and we're going to run them for 5 years. So how much money is that going to make us?
Right.
And the problem is that the university gets to the next year, and it says, well, okay, we need to take another decision. And now you're locked in.
Right.
And you're not going to move, and now your more of your money is ending up on Amazon's bottom line, and it's a problem.
So what would you say, what is your message to the CNI community? Is there a solution?
Well, I don't think there is. Actually,
right.
I'm really disappointed to say this, but I think the fundamental problem is this mismatch in planning horizons,
mm-hmm.
that unless people can think about budgeting for long-term preservation with a long planning horizon, they're always going to get into this situation where they're actually paying far too much for it. This business of trying to fund a long-term activity, preserving the heritage of the world,
right.
for the future, on an annual budget cycle, it just doesn't work.
Is there anything else you'd like to talk about that we haven't covered?
I'd just like to say that we haven't covered a lot of the details of what
sure.
I've been doing.
Where can people go to find out more?
Exactly. I try to blog everything I'm doing on my blog, which is blog.dshr.org. And in particular, when I give talks like the one I gave here yesterday, I try and put up the whole text of the talk and links to the resources and so on, because I think that's a lot more informative than just posting the slides,
sure.
which can't actually, I mean, typically you can't actually link to anything from the slides. And also, most of the details are in what you say instead of what's on the slides. And so I try to do this for everything. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time, David.
Not at all. It's a pleasure.